a guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's the kick! The super sub has done it again! And Motherwell are back in front!
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself and Jay are delighted to welcome along Craig Holmes. It's been a long time, mate. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, certainly a much more upbeat and positive result to reflect on. Certainly in comparison to the last podcast, a 4-1 victory over Ross County at the weekend, and it was just a much, much improved performance. We looked very confident, very comfortable, scored some great goals, a good afternoon's work, and one that we can hopefully now build on. And it seems very much so that we've managed to get that Inverness game out of our systems quickly, which was absolutely vital.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where everything went right. I think the game on Wednesday, I think we got a lot wrong in terms of team selection. That was rectified on Saturday, and we saw that right from the start. And of course, when you get an early goal like we did, it always, you know, makes things a little bit easier. You can always relax a little bit more. I don't want to get too carried away with it. I suppose that's the hand you're dealt when you're a football fan, that emotions can be quite polarised, and you go from, you know, it can be quite a bipolar experience, because after Wednesday you would have thought that we were on our way down based on the reaction, probably ourselves included. So by the same token, I don't want to start getting carried away, you know, that's us, we're going to march up the table now. It was probably one of the worst Ross County sides I've seen in quite a while. They don't look in a good way, but that said, we didn't really let them do anything. I thought that from, you know, every player on the park did what was asked of them perfectly. As I said, I think the team selection was good. Gone was the tactics of just launching the ball up at Ryan Bowman and hope he flicks it on to Lee Moult. Instead, with Lee Lucas in the midfield, you had someone who was prepared to take a pass from one of the centre-backs, put his foot in the ball and look to do something with it. I thought Ainsworth was fantastic in all aspects of his game. I don't think there was any surprise that we looked more dangerous with Lionel Ainsworth on the side. And then when you've got someone like Scott McDonald, who I didn't really understand why he was dropped for Wednesday night, but when you've got someone like him in the team, you know, you're going to score goals as well. So I think that it was one of those games where all the boxes you want ticked to come away from a game feeling quite pleased with your day's work. I think they were all ticked on the day.
Yeah, Craig, I think the inclusion of Ainsworth and Scott McDonald made a massive difference, and these guys, given their chance, certainly didn't let the manager down. Excellent performances from both of them, but for me the standout was Lee Lucas, who a much more dynamic midfielder, or a much more dynamic central midfielder from what we're used to. We tend to go for midfielders that can pass the ball sideways and tackle, but he seems to have a lot more to his game, and it was a very positive performance from him. And it was only just a shame that there was no match sponsor on Saturday, so he didn't actually get announced as man of the match, but for me he certainly deserved it.
Yeah, it was a great performance from him. It was very much, certainly from where I'm unknown, I saw him for maybe 20 minutes down at Annan before he got injured, so it was great to see him. Understandably tired in the second half, but like you say, he's different to what we've had before. We've not really had that sort of deep lying playmaker type. He was a very sort of typical Swansea midfielder, if you would describe him like that. But it's great to see. Hopefully, he can kick on now and get games under his belt and get a run in the first team. You know, like Jay was saying, Ainsworth makes a difference. We've seen over the years that he can be a game changer when he's on in the mood for it. We've seen him plenty of times not been on his game, but when he is, then at this level, he can be a game changer. So, you know, backing up what Jay said, we don't want to get too carried away. The team got a lot of criticism after Wednesday. They've kind of righted those wrongs to an extent. That includes the management team. They've kind of put players in the positions they should be in my opinion. And we've sort of righted those wrongs. So it's good to get a win. It's great. Going home on a Saturday night after a victory. But the key now is to try and kick on. We've got two big games coming up against teams running about us. But I think in these games, you kind of find that the first goal changes everything. You know, many times you lose the first goal and the heads go down. It makes a difference when you get the early goal and the tails go up. But, you know, full focus should be on the next two games now. Hopefully we can kick on from this result and grab a couple more wins.
Jay, a lot of the chat coming into the match was surrounding Mark McGee, and there does seem to be quite a vocal element of our support just now that very much don't want Mark McGee in charge at Fir Park. I think on the podcast following the Inverness game, we all agreed that it was extremely unlikely that a negative result on Saturday was going to make any difference to the future of Mark McGee. Now that we have got that good result, where would you say that leaves the manager in his position? My summary of it would be he played players in the right positions on Saturday and he got the results. Surely we now have to see the end of Mark McGee trying to overcomplicate things and just stick to the basics, because the squad that we have there is good enough to be winning as many games as against teams like Ross County, Inverness, Partick Thistle, Dundee. I think we're more than capable of beating teams like that on our day, and then we can start thinking about the pushing for the top six or wherever we end up at the end of that. But for now, it's just getting back to basics for the manager for me.
No, I agree entirely. You know, my opinion on Mark McGee didn't really change in the aftermath of the Inverness game, and it hasn't really changed after the Ross County game. As, you know, some, you know, seven folk who are listening might have read the blog on the website that I wrote last week about Mark McGee, and that basically it was more an observation. I wasn't having a rant. I certainly wasn't calling for his head. I was just making an observation and suggesting a possible theory that Mark McGee's unfortunate ego leads him to assume that he can perhaps overthink things or try and be a bit too smart and basically try and be the tactical genius for certain games. And it also leads him to be quite stubborn when it comes to making changes. And I think we've seen that. We've seen it at Tynecastle. We've seen it, you know, in Dingwall. We've seen it at home against Inverness in the Cup before. And my point always was that if we just stop doing that, you know, there's no need to go into games against, you know, Inverness at home thinking that you need to pull some rabbit out the hat or do some sort of tactical, you know, manoeuvre that nobody was expecting. We have good enough players at Motherwell. When you have guys in your team like Louis Moult, like Scott McDonald, like Chrissy Cadden, like Lionel Ainsworth, you should be able to go into a home game against sides like Ross County, Inverness, Partick Thistle, Hamilton Accies, Dundee, and you should be able to say, right, we're going to play this simple, straightforward system, and we are going to play these players who fit in that system, and we're going to go and play our own game. We're going to, you know, yes, be creative, yeah, work on little things, you know, work on your set pieces, work on certain positioning and aspects of the game, etc. But when it comes to the actual, you know, your bread and butter, the basics, Mark McGee's biggest problem for me has always been that he tries too hard to be the centre of attention. He tries too hard to, you know, do that thing that nobody else was thinking. And I think what he's proven, what he's essentially proven, is that there are managers in the world who will do something that none of the other fans, you know, can see. You know, he sees something that other fans don't see. And in the very, very few occasions, it's because that manager is some sort of tactical visionary, some sort of tactical genius. But in Mark McGee's case, the reason that he sees something that we don't see is because what he sees doesn't exist. And it happens too often, and it has cost us points in the past. So if Mark McGee does stop doing that, which he did on Saturday, he picked his 4-4-2, you know, formation, and he picked players that would suit that formation, including someone that, I know that Lasley was injured, but even just the difference of having, you know, some a different central midfielder alongside Clay rather than a, you know, a Calvin copy, just things that should be relatively simple and straightforward, not overthinking things, not overcomplicating things, not looking for the unpredictable. Go with your strongest team and a fairly straightforward, simple lineup, and we, you know, we reap the rewards. So it hasn't changed my opinion on him. I still fully expect that, you know, whether it's at Dundee, whether it's in a month, whether it's in 3 months, we will see an utterly bizarre lineup because Mark McGee has decided that he knows better than everybody else. But I remain confident that we've got the players at the club, and I remain confident that somewhere underneath all the ego and arrogance, Mark McGee is actually a half-decent manager. And I think when you've got those ingredients, then hopefully it is going to lead us to winning more games than not. But I do think we have the players that if we just keep things a little bit more basic, we will beat teams like Dundee, like Partick Thistle, and we will start to climb the table a little bit.
I think it kind of escalated into it, Craig, from the run of results, the Hearts defeat, the defeat at Celtic Park, and then the crushing defeat last midweek against Inverness, from a period of time where we were relatively secure looking and stable. Suddenly we were slipping down the league and found ourselves second bottom. It's amazing the significance of a few results in this league where basically you can find yourself right at the bottom to heading for the top and kind of vice versa when results go against you. So I think that there have been a few that have perhaps overreacted to this, but the bigger picture, of course, is that there's plenty that I haven't forgiven Mark McGee for his first spell and the way that he left in his first spell at the club. And to be honest, these people are not going to be appeased or satisfied until they see Mark McGee leaving the club, which, as we've already discussed there, doesn't seem very likely, not in the very near future anyway.
No, I can't see it happening anytime soon. But, you know, you talk about the league itself, you know, you know, if you remember prior to the Hearts game, if we won that game, we'd have went second, you know, and what, three games later, we're over second bottom. So it shows you, at this time of the season especially, how tight the league is. You know, we got what, three defeats in a row, and I think any manager is going to get criticism for that. But when you add that into the fact that a lot of you know, the fans are not a big fan of the manager, then it's going to be come across a bit worse. For the ones who don't like him, you know, it's entirely that's their choice. It's up to them to, you know, go about it. I don't think it's going to achieve anything sort of being woke about it at a game. But, you know, I think some have done in the past. But, you know, I think all we can do is get the positive results. Jay was talking about playing players in the right formation and the right going in the right way about it. You know, we've seen these crazy formations in the past at various grounds. And it's funny, I was talking about it. You know, a guy at work is a Dundee fan and they're playing in a back three at the moment. So I kind of worried about McGee going up against a 3-5-2 and wondering if he's going to match them up and try and, as if it's some sort of challenge for him to go up against. I hope he doesn't do that. You know, he talked about after the game how he's found, you know, 11 players that have performed well and they're in the team to stay if they keep doing as they're doing. So I would certainly hope that going into this game on Saturday we keep the same team and we give these guys an opportunity to prove that it's their shots, and no matter who's coming back in the squad, whether it's Lasley or Hamill are fit again, then they have to earn the right to get back in the team. I don't think it'd be fair for anyone to be dropped after Saturday's performance.
Jay, I find it very hard to find a negative from Saturday, but one minor bugbear of mine was that the fact that we didn't change things at 4-0 up. I would have liked to see a few guys getting on a bit earlier and be given a chance, in particular Alan Campbell, who came on towards the end for his first team debut. You're winning 4-0 at 60 odd minutes. I would have liked to see him on then rather than waiting to the last 10 to get his chance. It's perhaps a minor thing, but by the time he had actually settled into the game, the full time whistle had went. So it's a small gripe, but yet again, the changes aren't coming early enough for me. So maybe just something to look at going forward. The manager's often been accused of being reluctant to make a change, and it was again the case on Saturday, despite the fact the team were obviously playing very well.
No, I definitely see where you're coming from. I suppose it is one of those ones that is easily dismissed as being, you know, just looking for something to moan about. But I do agree to a certain extent. I think that it's all very well us watching the game and thinking, oh, well, what difference does it make whether it was 60 minutes or 80 minutes that he came on? You know, we won, it's fine, he got an appearance, great. But that 20 minutes could make a massive amount of difference for a young player. And when we were, you know, controlling the game as we were, then it would have been good to maybe see one or two of the younger players brought in. I'll be honest, at 4-0, I still thought there was a chance we might have saw James McFadden at one point. You know, a completely wasted substitution to make, but McGee has shown himself. And
that was only unlikely because he wasn't on the bench.
Oh, well, there is that, I suppose. There you go. But even then, I still wouldn't have ruled it out. But no, I just think there is that kind of nagging feeling that those are entirely the situations that you should be bringing a couple of young players onto the field a wee bit earlier. Particularly because, you know, it's not a situation we're going to find ourselves in too often. So if you're going to be looking at guys like Alan Campbell, for example, and you don't feel he's quite ready to be starting games, and he's only really going to be coming off the bench, he's also playing in a position as a central midfielder. It's not an area you're really going to be wanting to change up too often, unless there's a reason for it, tiredness, injury, whatever it is. You know, if you've got two players like Clay and Lucas, where, you know, controlling the midfield, doing really well in there, the last thing you want to do is kind of shake that up by bringing somebody on. And it could be the case that someone like Alan Campbell really can only get game time for this Motherwell side if we are comfortable. And so that's why I agree with what you're saying. I think that we are not... I don't foresee, Motherwell being 4-0 ahead in too many games this season. So it would have been nice to bring someone on a wee bit earlier. But again, you know, you don't want to focus too much on that because it was a great performance. And you know, we need to enjoy what was a good 3 points.
I'm going to sort of jump in there and say, I think you're sort of being a bit harsh, both of you there, to say, like, you know, we should have brought these boys on earlier. And I think after 60 minutes, we brought on, you know, for example, McLean and Campbell. And after 78, sitting at 4-2, then, you know, the full ground is going to get a bit shaky. And, you know, you get two young guys on there who are not the most experienced. On top of that, I think the 11 who started deserved as much of the 90 minutes as possible, because they're the ones that earned that 4-0, you know, lead at the time. So I think it'd be a bit harsh to sort of whip two of them off after an hour. You know, they played fantastically well. It's very much a catch-22 with youngsters. You know, we obviously want to get them involved where possible, but I think after, you know, the performance that the guys on who started put in, I think they deserved as much of the game time as they could. I think it was sort of managed properly. You know, I think you could maybe argue give them 10-15 minutes rather than 5-10, but I think these guys will get in the team eventually. It's just getting them used to it, little bits at a time. So I've got no issues with them coming on after 80 minutes rather than 60.
I can see the first point, definitely. I mean, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. If it all went wrong, then absolutely. The second point, though, I don't think, you know, players get taken off at 4-0, you know, to take a player off to keep them fresh for, you know, next week or you know, to give them a wee rest. I mean, Clay has often looked quite tired as the games went on, you know, so to take Clay off a wee bit earlier and put on Campbell, I don't think would have been, you know, the worst decision about it. I'm sure the players would have been, you know, happy enough with the result to not be too concerned about getting taken off earlier.
I think, completely, yeah, it's fine, but at the same time, you know, these guys have went through, you know, 3 defeats in the last 15 days or whatever it is. I'm sure they'll be delighted for every single minute on the park they had when they're 4-0 up, so it's about building the confidence of those guys as well. You know, they've taken some heavy defeats and a bit of criticism over the last couple of weeks, so I was happy for them to sort of soak up as much as they can on Saturday. They seem to be enjoying their football and getting the ball down, which is a lot, you know, different to the hoof ball that we saw on Wednesday night. So, you know, I see both points of the argument, but I think it would be a bit harsh to criticise them too much over keeping the same team on the pitch for sort of 80 minutes.
Yeah, and I suppose to go against my point as well, Mark McGee had alluded to how stop-start the season's been so far as well, so maybe that's an element there as well. He just wants to actually build up the guys ahead of what's going to be a pretty frantic end to November, and then I think it's 7 league games in December, so it's going to be busy going into that January break. So, yeah, it's, as I say, it's a minor gripe, but it's very good to see the number of young players that have been given their chance as well. I really like the look of Campbell when attending the Iron Brew Cup games at the start of the season. Then you've had McLean, Hasty, McMillan. You've also got guys like Cadden already in the team, so it's looking very bright in that sense.
Oh, Stegosaurus.
And it wasn't just success for the Motherwell first team men's team at the weekend. The ladies team securing a second successive promotion, a second successive championship. And we're delighted to welcome along just now Suzanne Grant, who played a rather big role in that title success, scoring 68 times over the course of the season. Welcome along, Suzanne.
Hiya, how are you?
Yeah, we're doing well, we're doing well.
Good.
Nice to obviously, since you've joined the club, it's second successive promotion. You must be delighted at the progress the team have made over your time at the club, and then it's clear that the wheels have been in motion and the improvements have been happening pretty gradually over the last maybe 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, definitely. I'm most of all delighted for obviously the staff that do the hard work behind the scenes, in which they have been doing at Motherwell before I joined. So it's fantastic the development they've done for the women's game, and we can only reward them by winning titles, which we've done. So it's fantastic for us as players and obviously as a club in a whole. So it's great.
And it's been nice to see the plaudits and the recognition coming the way of the team as well. Whereas, dare I say, over the best part of the season, it sometimes goes a bit quiet. And I know the club do their best to promote that there's games on and so forth. But I suppose a success like that on the scale of what you've achieved, that's going to bring the team to prominence, and you'll be hoping that kind of brings along some extra fans to the games as well.
Yeah, definitely. The club I'm sure they do the most that they can to promote, obviously, the women's side of it and, you know, our games. And obviously, the more you win, the more recognition and, you know, advertisement you're going to get. That's just a given in any sport, or doesn't matter if it's male or female. So for us, obviously, to win a title, it's good to get a wee bit of recognition from club, from fans, from people that probably never watched us play before. So it just, you know, it makes aware of women's football more and more, and I think it's great. And hopefully now we're up to the Premier 2, that it can only be better, and we can get more fans and more recognition that we deserve.
Looking at yourself specifically, you've played at a very high level in the women's game, uh-huh. Playing with Arsenal ladies, who, for someone that doesn't know that much about the women's game, I always kind of take them as to be the giant of the game, so to speak. And
yeah,
then having played with Celtic and over 100 uh-huh. caps for Scotland, you've certainly got bringing a lot of experience to the table there. What has the comparisons been to playing at Motherwell just now? Is, I take it the level has been a slight drop. Is the promotion now bringing you back up to the level or a similar level to what you were at?
Yeah, for me that was the biggest challenge for me actually going to Motherwell. It wasn't about the girls that were there, us as a team. It was, and it's no disrespect to obviously the teams that we've played against, but for me it was dropping, you know, a few levels that I'm used to be playing. So for me, I kind of felt under pressure to, you know, Suzanne's played at a higher level, as of other players have in our team as well. So it's not just me. But then again, I had time out. I had Oscar. So for me, I was like, it might be good just to get me back in, to get fit. And it certainly has paid off for me. And it's kind of good to say and feel that maybe I've still got it. Because I am older as well, so it is harder to keep fit, and obviously being a mum. So for me, that was a challenge, was actually the level. But this league was a lot harder than what, you know, we had previously, and obviously now we're stepping up again, so which is a more challenge, and it will be nearer to what we've played previously. So I'm really looking forward to another season under my belt, if my legs will carry me, and I'm looking really forward to next season.
That kind of takes us on nicely to to yourself and looking ahead to next season. I take it your ambitions are to continue playing with Motherwell and seeing how far you can go. Is there a chance of promotion again to the very highest level?
Yeah, definitely. We wouldn't compete in any league if we didn't want to win. And obviously, we have got a lot of experienced players in the team, and we're all used to playing, or have been used to playing at, you know, Premier League level. So that's the level that we want to get to. And I still believe, even though that we are older players in the team, that we've still got the head to be able to play at that level. And then the young ones around us who are exceptional that can basically do our running. No, but all kids aside, we have got like amazing young players that are coming through that, in my opinion, are definitely good enough to compete at the higher level. And it's going to be an exciting season and a new challenge for Motherwell, and I think we're all happy to accept it.
Do you and the more experienced players see your role as a bit different compared to your time at Celtic, taking your time at Arsenal, where you're kind of able to pass on the advice of a career in the women's game to these younger players, and while they'll be doing your running, they'll be learning a lot from you as well, given you do boast vast experience in the game?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, I've been in their shoes. I was a younger player and had to look up to senior players in the game, and obviously now the coin's flipped for me. I'm now an experienced player, as you say, or should I say older, and they hopefully look up to me and can learn from me and, you know, the other girls in the team. And the young ones are great. They've got great talent. It speaks for itself. So they're doing a great job at Motherwell, and they're feeding all these young players through. So, yeah, I hope they can learn off the experienced players, and we can learn off them as well. You know, every day football, it's about learning, and it's about a team. It's not about who's got so many caps and who's played at what level. We're a team, and that's what is really good at Motherwell. We don't treat anybody different, and we're all, you know, on the same wavelength. So, yeah, it's a great club, and I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen next year. And hopefully they can take in new players as well for next year to step up and improve and make it stronger.
And you had a genuine excuse with taking the wee man round the doors for Halloween last night, but I take it there were a few sore heads and over the course of Monday after the celebrations on Sunday night.
Yeah, we went out after the game on Sunday and just had a few soft drinks. But yeah, it was good just to be able to do that, because obviously we train, you know, during the week, and some of the girls work. I'm a mum, I'm studying as well, and so it's really good to get that time together as a team where we're just actually sitting chilled and having a couple of drinks. And yeah, and all the hard work we've put in as well, I think we deserved it. And yeah, it was a really good night, and we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves.
Good stuff. The other kind of side of it is, and it was quite nice to see the podcast book launch a few weeks ago, to see yourself kind of mixing with current players, and it seemed to I noticed Louis Moult quickly tweeting after the team had won the league, congratulating the ladies on their victory. It's good to see the two clubs kind of sitting side by side, and it seems there's a bit of rapport between the men's first team and then the women's team as well.
Yeah, I think that was a big thing as well. When obviously I came to Motherwell, that was the first thing that I knew straight away. The club, you know, they welcomed me into the club, and you know, it was very professionally done. And you know, it was the wee things like I mentioned in the podcast book, that when I came to sign, obviously I brought my son, and they had a strip with Mama 99 on it for Oscar. And that's just small things as a player that means a lot, and it was very touching to me. And yeah, the girls, like straight away, the remote tweeting, the girls were like, that's amazing. And you know, it's just nice to know that we back them and they back us, and there's no, you know, there's no like, oh, they're doing better than us or we're doing better than them. It's just a nice club, and it's such a family-run club. And yeah, the girls like appreciate everything that they do for us, and it's great.
Well, myself, Craig and Jay are going to go on and talk about the Well Society and the recent movements there, where the fans are now the main shareholders in the club. Have the women's club team been briefed in that, and the kind of, there's maybe now an extra onus on everybody involved at the club to continue the role and how significant Motherwell Football Club is in the local community?
Yeah, they've touched on it briefly with us, but we're having meetings this week and next week, and obviously that'll be mentioned in more detail to the players. And I think it's a great thing, and you know, the fans are basically a club, in my opinion. So I think it's a massive step for Motherwell, and I think it's a great thing that they're doing, and hopefully that can, you know, have an effect on the women's team as well, and we get more support and, you know, more backing as well, and the fans start coming to maybe more of the women's game as well, and interacting with us as well.
Yeah, that's a thing that we touched on in the interview I did with you last month. The exposure of the games with the Scotland women's games being at Firth Park, or a select few of the qualifiers in the last campaign being at Firth Park, then the success of the Motherwell ladies team as well. Is there a kind of extra determination then to bring the game to a bigger audience? It seems like, even from watching Hibs play Bayern Munich, for example, in the Champions League qualifiers there as well, it seemed like there was a decent crowd, a decent interest. Hibs were very much pushing it.
Would
you like the opportunity to play at Firth Park? It seems to me to make sense that you stage the games at a place where you're likely to kind of increase revenue and increase exposure and attendance.
Yeah, there was mention of us actually playing on Firth Park, but I think our fixtures it didn't tie in with the men's game, so they do try and they do push for it. Alan Burrows is very supportive of that, so hopefully next season, obviously, as well. Now we're up into Premier League 2, it might make a difference, obviously, getting people to the games. It'll be a higher level opposition that we're playing. And obviously, as well, like, you want it to be a good game. As females, we don't want to play a team that we're going to, you know, destroy on. You know, it just doesn't look good for the game, I don't think, personally. So you want a really good competitive game, you know, to be played on Firth Park. And for us girls, you know, we appreciate what we get, and we don't get greedy. We don't say, oh, we're not getting this and we're not getting that. We're just grateful for everything that we get from the club. And we would, you know, there is a lot of girls that are massive Motherwell fans in the team, and, you know, it's their dream to play in Firth Park. I've played there personally with the national team loads of times, so it's a great wee stadium, and hopefully that some of the girls in the team that haven't experienced that can next year.
Suzanne, congratulations again, and thank you very much for joining us tonight.
No problem, thanks for having me on.
And now what we'll do is we'll go back to Craig and Jay to finish off the podcast. Sorry, there was a day delay in recording between my interview with Suzanne and also us recording the podcast on the Monday night, so we'll go back to that just now.
Oh, Stegosaurus.
A big moment in the future of the football club came on Friday when the Well Society takeover went through. Les Hutchison stepping aside after a year and a bit in charge. And Jay, I think that at a time where things were all quite quiet in the front of the Well Society, the news did come as a bit of a surprise, and there's absolutely no doubt now that the hard work starts here. We've got Craig Hughes coming on next Monday to kind of talk through what's been happening in the last couple of months. I know there's been a lot of things that have been held up by red tape, and there's obviously confidentiality clauses as well with things like that, so it couldn't be kind of sang from the rooftops. For all we know, that the guys have been absolutely knocking in their pans to get this deal over the line. But I think there is always going to be scepticism, particularly in the front of the Well Society, who we have been quite critical of their work in the past. But just like everything else, it's a fresh start here. It's got to work. It's the only show in town now. It's going to be very interesting to see how the next few months and then from there on go.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I find it interesting to pick up on, you know, the fact that you said the news came after a period of relative quiet from the Well Society. It could be argued that, you know, that's just the Well Society. You don't tend to hear anything whatsoever. I don't see it quite as when I saw it sort of flash up on social media, a lot of people sharing the links to the statement and stuff. It didn't have quite the impact as it, you know, I thought it would when I joined in 2012. Wasn't particularly exciting because it's the Welsh society themselves still have a lot of work to do to win people round and to inspire people and to, you know, make people believe that they can actually achieve this. I don't have any doubts whatsoever about fan ownership itself. I think that fan ownership is a great opportunity for fans to have a, you know, a better say in how their teams run. I think it also means that future decisions, I mean, how often in the last, since we started the podcast, have we been on complaining about the idea of budgeting for top six and, you know, budgeting for cup runs and, you know, that we were quite critical of Les Hutchison spending and things like that. Fan ownership allows you the chance to ensure that every decision taken in the future will be done 100% in the best interest of the long-term future of the club. I think that there's a lot to be excited about fan ownership. But the problem is that the only time you hear anybody being genuinely engaging and inspiring and exciting about fan ownership, it's usually sort of third-party individuals. It's, you know, the guy from Sports Direct. It's, you know, someone from another supporters association. It might be someone from Foundation of Hearts. Whenever it's someone Motherwell related to is telling you about the Welsh Society, you tend to switch off because there's no engagement there. There's no, you know, attempt to tap into a love of the club or anything like that. You know, essentially a poster with some old photos of Motherwell players on it is as far as you get in that regard. So, for me, I always try and just keep in mind that there's two issues here. There's fan ownership itself, and then there is the vehicle that currently exists to make that happen. I remain to be convinced, and I probably will never be convinced, that fan ownership can't work. I think it can, but I am far from convinced that the Welsh Society itself is the future. Now, how you combat that is up to Motherwell fans now, because we're now in that situation where, you know, basically every individual Motherwell fan needs to kind of decide where they stand. If they're quite happy not to be interested in the fan ownership and don't want to be involved, then that's entirely up to them. But over the years, there's been Motherwell fans that I've spoken to, I'm sure you have as well, that are sort of suggested that, well, I'll just wait and see what happens. I'll see, you know, when it comes down to it, if it's death or glory, then maybe I'll then get involved. It's now at that point. And the opportunity still exists, not just for Motherwell fans to pay £10 a month to allow the Welsh Society to continue being pretty rubbish. I mean, the whole point about it is that it's supposed to be a democratic process. So if enough Motherwell fans decided that the Welsh Society weren't good enough and they wanted to start again, and, you know, I'm not advocating that the people in the Welsh Society lose their positions on there, but the Welsh Society is merely a vehicle. It's merely, you know, the representatives that we have elected, and therefore the power still exists, and the power still lies with the fans. The problem is that the Welsh Society have created such an indifference in the Motherwell support that I think a lot of fans have forgotten that power exists. So it just basically comes down to how the Motherwell support now want to proceed. Yes, you just need to go onto social media or listen to us in the podcast or mention it in the pub. I think the feelings towards the Welsh Society are pretty clear from a lot of Motherwell fans. It's not particularly, you know, dislike or anything like that. I think it's just indifference. They're not inspired, they're not engaged. Whether the Welsh Society will improve on that remains to be seen. We've had this conversation on quite a lot of, you know, benchmarks along the way, and it's never really improved, so I don't hold out much hope. So for me, it's down to the fans. If fans believe in fan ownership and want that to happen, then it still can, whether or not they are particularly confident in the Welsh Society itself.
Craig, I think that it's like quite a lot of other things that when these things eventually go through, regardless of how much of a sceptic you've been about it beforehand, when it goes through, that starts to generate attention. There was a fair amount of media focus over the weekend on the fact that the Welsh Society had achieved their goal of achieving fan ownership at Fir Park. I'm pretty sure they will have been pretty much inundated with people trying to get involved and everything else. I now just kind of, my only big concern would be that, is there enough resources there within the Welsh Society to deal with that kind of increase in uptake and increase in interest? They're going to have a big game of catch-up to do over the course of the week, and I just hope that they've got enough resources there to ensure that everyone that wants to be part of this signs up, because you've got to cash in on the interest. The publicity is at an all-time high, I would say, so it's key that the Welsh Society capture this interest and then engage these people in the correct manner, because as Jay's pointed out, 4 years on from signing up, it's not been the most inspiring of 4 years.
Absolutely. I'm sort of the one, I'd never signed up at the beginning. I was very much a kind of, let me see how this goes. And I think with the Welsh City was, it sort of started off so badly that a number of people just switched off from sort of, you know, very early doors. And I only came across or came involved maybe over the last 9 months or so, when they sort of gave us the sort of the small direct debit options. And I signed up and put a few quid a month in. And to be fair, you know, I got a few emails back and forth straight away. And you know, you could tell that they were trying to communicate and be a bit better. And I think you have improved. I think, you know, I'm sure that they'll even agree that they're far away from where they want to be. But, you know, I think you have to give them credit. I think they have improved over the last few months. You know, they're coming out and they're giving you a bit more up-to-date details of membership and how much is in the pot, etc. You know, which is good, because a lot of the criticism has been they're very closed shop. They don't tell you anything. So I think credit where credit's due. They have improved, but I think the problem they had was they started so low, and the opinion of them within the first sort of 12 to 18 months was so negative that they haven't done a lot of work to sort of try and pull that back. You know, what you were saying about, you know, they're going to get a bit more exposure and a bit more interest in them. I don't think it's anything wrong if they say, look, there's not many of us here, there's only a few of us. We may take a bit of time to get round to your request. I think it's about being open and honest. You know, there's no point in sitting there quietly and getting all these requests and then not be able to deal with it. I don't think if anyone has got a phone call and said, look, I've got your details here, we will get in contact with you when we can. Nothing wrong with that. You know, we'll get there eventually. So I think it's about a bit more openness, a bit more honesty. Because I think, like Jay said, you know, fan ownership and Welsh City are two different things. Fan ownership is fantastic, and there's no reason why it can't work and it won't work. It's not about, you know, 10 guys for the pub all of a sudden going for the standing at the boardroom. That's not, you know, fan ownership. You know, that's easy enough to explain, but, you know, I think it can work. I think it will work. As long as the people on the Welsh City board and who work within them, a bit more open, a bit more honest. And I think it will work. Like I said, it started off very poor, but to give them credit, I think they're working their way back up, and hopefully they keep doing what they're doing.
I completely agree on the point of just being upfront and saying if the demands are getting a wee bit too much over the coming weeks, to just communicate that via email, via phone call. It's such a simple thing to do, but something that Motherwell Football Club as a whole have been a bit guilty of, in terms of, I see people complaining about tiles in the tunnel and bricks in the David Cooper stand and things like that. If you've not had enough orders, or...
Yeah, I think it's definitely about the fact you're not being told these things. You know, there's no, again, tile in the tunnel or whatever, brick or whatever. If you're phoned up and kept updated on a regular basis, it's going to be 6 weeks, it's going to be 8 weeks. As long as you're kept up to date, then there's no issue, I don't think, with anyone there. I think the issues people have, and when you talk about the tile, you know, one of my family members got a tile for his birthday a few months ago, and then they phoned up, you know, 2 months later to ask where it was, and they said, oh, we've got no record of it. You know, it was just completely forgotten about. So, you know, they had to go through the whole process again. So I think it's just silly little things like that. I think as long as they keep on top of things, they just keep people updated and they make it open and honest. You can't really go wrong. You know, if it's not really a sign of weakness to say you're struggling or you know, things like that. So I think it's very much about being open and being honest about it.
Yeah, I think that is pretty obvious, isn't it, Jay, that if you're made to feel a bit more of a part of it and made to feel that you're... I'm not saying that everybody that's contributing to the Welsh Society, I'm representative from the club, should be coming round and buying them a cake or something like that, but I'm just saying, like, just... I think society members, well, certainly... I think it's nice to be kind of appreciated and to feel a part of something, and that's been my kind of gripe with the Welsh Society. Despite being a Welsh Society member for over 4 years, I've never really felt a part of the Welsh Society, which is the problem that the guys involved just now are having to overcome and try and get people kind of back on side and back feeling a part of it again.
Oh no, absolutely. I mean, the clue's in the name. It's fan ownership, and we're fans. You know, it's not supposed to be a case of a direct debit, like you're donating a monthly sum to charity. It's supposed to, you're supposed to feel involved. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be about democracy. You're supposed to be engaged and be inspired and be interested. You don't need to be. You know, if you're happy to put in your money and not have much to do with it because you're just quite happy to, you know, right, there's my money in, that's all I want to do, then that's fine. But there should be a platform for people who want to discuss ideas or yeah, just feel more involved, because that is what it's meant to be about. And I've similarly had gripes along the way, and it's not big stuff. I just think that more effort could be done to encourage people to be involved from the start. I think Def's got a great shout with the idea that they were just so bad to begin with that anybody, I think now, particularly now, you know, myself included, I think anybody who thinks that they would be able to bring a lot to the table are completely put off by getting, you know, involved to a certain degree. I certainly have been involved in certain aspects, but the idea of being involved and actually being associated with the Welsh society is almost quite, you know, not an easy thing for people to do nowadays, because it has become such a negative term and a negative image that they've created for themselves. And they need to get beyond that. And I think the first step is to make people think, or feel, sorry, not think, don't want to mislead people. People should be literally, like, genuinely involved. And I think it goes beyond just, you know, a Q&A, you know, inviting people to the AGM and then having a Q&A for an hour. I think it has to go beyond that. You need to capture people's imaginations. We are now at the situation where we own the club. So perhaps that's an excuse for it. You know, beforehand, all smoke and daggers, you need to keep things under wraps and concerning business deals and things like that. But we're now talking about, you know, those of us in the Welsh Society owning the club. And I think that's when you can engage people with actual ideas. Now, it doesn't need to be a case of, right, let's have a vote poll on Steelman Online about, you know, what colour that you want the stairs painted in the East Stand. But when people are putting themselves forward for the board, one of my gripes, for example, was the fact that emails used to go out saying, right, we're going to be looking for a new member on the board, send your, you know, your details to this email address. Keep in mind, we're looking for people with marketing or commercial experience. And that's fair enough. You need people like that on the board. But it was just so kind of off-putting. And, you know, I don't personally, I've never worked in marketing, so that's me off the list straight away. And it just puts people off. I didn't want to be in a position where I was considering who I was going to vote onto the Welsh Society board based on the CV that they had copied and pasted into a PDF file for me to read, detailing their marketing and commercial experience. I would much rather, you know, take into consideration their ideas. And as much as, you know, marketing or actual experience is, of course, required, as Desp says, you know, the last thing you want is 10 folk going from the East Stand into the boardroom. You need people on that board who are, you know, savvy when it comes to finance and business, etc. But I also want to know what people's ideas are. I want to know whether there's going to be someone representing me in the Welsh Society Board who's going to champion, you know, the living wage, for example, and just things like that. And there's never, ever been any discussion about things like that. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, that kind of thing is going to suddenly transform the Welsh Society and there's going to be queues to join. But just little things like that to make you feel like you have an actual say, rather than me picking between three people who, you know, all sound relatively the same because they've all answered an advert that asked for marketing experience. It should be more about what actually represents us as fans, what we want to see in our football club, and because that's what fan ownership is about to, you know, supposed to be about. That may just be because we were waiting for the moment that we actually did own the club. I hope so. But as Desp says, and it says correctly, you know, they've given themselves such a bad name with being so inept in the past, that it's really hard to kind of get excited about fan ownership that involves the Welsh Society.
What we'll do is, to wrap up, we'll look at the Dundee game, and also, just before we do that, the news this morning that Michael Higden had been forced to retire from the game was something that, the game is quite sad news, to be honest. A brilliant few years he had at Motherwell Football Club, winning the Scottish Player of the Year was from basically nowhere. He had been written off as someone that was lazy and this, that and the next thing, and the goals he scored that season time and time again, thinking about the overhead kick against Hibs and things like that. Just a real, it was a huge part of that team at the time, and a team that had great success and played some great football under Stuart McCall. It's a shame to see he wasn't really able to recapture that for him, Des, when he moved on to Sheffield United and beyond.
Yeah, I think, like I said online this morning, it was, you know, very much he signed at, you know, the right place at the right time, and you know, he was lucky to play in a fantastic team, but, you know, let's not, you know, put him down. Now he worked his socks off to get where he did with Motherwell. You know, like you say, he got off to a sticky start with a section of support, but, you know, think of the goals he scored over two seasons. You know, he talked about the one against Hibs, and I always remember the one up at Tannadice, towards the end of his first season, and he put him on 25 yards. And I think I said this morning as well, I think over the 2 years, I think he probably became my favourite Motherwell striker over the last 20 years, because he just, everything he touched was in the back of the net. And after the 2 years, you couldn't grudge him, you know, going, he went to Holland, and obviously for a, you know, a nice payday, and you couldn't grudge him, because obviously he'd worked his way up, you know, over sort of lower leagues in England, and he came up to, you know, Falkirk and St Mirren, and, you know, I wouldn't imagine he was earning a fortune. So, you know, the chance to sign off is the best player in Scotland for that season, and I'm sure he'll look back and be very proud of that fact. And, you know, he got a chance to play in a different country as well, which would be great. So I wish him all the best in his retirement. I really enjoyed his time at Firth Park. He really became a favourite of mine very quickly. So yeah, I wish him all the best.
And Jay, there's not many players that can say that they won the Scottish Player of the Year and got to batter a bouncer on the same night as well, eh?
Well, that's it. If he wasn't a hero by that point, that's all the makings of him. No, it was fantastic. I mean, you know, Des picks up there on the fact that, you know, he had a minority of detractors early on in his career. I mean, as I still remember some of the chat and steelmen online in the first month or two of him arriving, you know, it'd be great to go back and read some of that stuff, because as Des says, I mean, for me, back, yes, we've had Porter, you know, Jukovic was great, McCormick, etc., but I think Higdon's, you know, better than them all, and so you're kind of going back to possibly Tommy Coyne. You know, when you're talking about someone as clinical and to have such a big impact, because I think when is the next time Motherwell's going to have a player of the year? Let's be honest, I don't foresee it in the you know, the near or distant future.
No, absolutely, and we'll now turn our attention to that game on Saturday at Dens Park. I suppose in the back of what I described as a make or break game on Saturday against Ross County, we've got the win. But given the results around us, Partick Thistle won at McDermott Park, Dundee got a great result at Aki's. So we're going to this game on Saturday, Jay, possibly just in the exact same frame of mind, and hopefully we approach it as such with the same attacking fluency, the same levels of energy, and play in the same manner. Because if we do, then I think we've got every chance of coming away again with a positive result against the Dundee side that, well, they went into Saturday's game not having won since the opening day. I think they're still without a home victory this season, so their fans will be edgy. They'll not have complete faith in their team's ability to get a result on Saturday. We have to go there and take advantage of that, get 3 points, and it's a great way to go into the international break.
I mean, Def's now got me, you know, giving me the fear we're going 3-5-2 on Saturday. I think as we keep saying, you know, again, one of the things that hates me about, or I hate about football fans in general, is the kind of, you know, I told you so, you know, moaning about something, and then when something else happens, going, well, we said that all along. But this is one situation where I think not just ourselves, but the vast majority of Motherwell fans have been saying on social media and, you know, forums and in the pub, etc., that McGee does overthink things, and if he goes simple, we have the players to make it work. So I've got no doubts that if we go and play the same team at Dens Park, okay, it will be a different game. We might not score early on, and we might not have as much of the ball. We might need to take into account that they, you know, if they do have an extra central midfielder, then they may have more of the possession in there. So yeah, you may have to adapt slightly as the game goes on. But I have no doubt whatsoever that, you know, when we put 11 on the park in positions that they should be playing, that we are a good side. And when you look man for man at teams like Aki's, Dundee, Thistle, I would rather have Scott McDonald and Lionel Ainsworth and Chrissy Cadden, and I would certainly now rather have Lee Lucas because he looks fucking brilliant. But, you know, I just think that there's absolutely nothing to fear going into these games if we keep it simple. And until we kind of get into that rhythm of keeping it simple, I will still check the team lineup on Twitter at 2 o'clock, shiting myself that we're, you know, playing Joe Chalmers at sweeper or something.
There's no doubt in Craig the importance of this one, just as we had to win on Saturday to kind of bolster our position and bolster our mindset as well to set us up going into this one. But you lose on Saturday and then we go into the international break in a pretty sour note. So I think while it's not a must win, it's probably a must not lose.
Yeah, it's probably fair enough. I don't think a point would be the worst result in the world. You know, I think we're probably looking for at least 4 points in the next two games. We've got part to get home after the break. So 4 points would be probably the minimum you look for. But like I said earlier, with these kind of games, I think the first goal is so crucial. You know, that we play teams around about ourselves. I think you add that to the fact that Dundee haven't won at home this season. If we can get the first goal, and also I guess the crowd affected, you know, the home crowd affected and slightly that way. So, you know, I think we have to go with the same team again. And obviously, barring any injuries, it has to be the same 11 again. You know, I think the manager mentioned it after the game that he's now sort of challenged the players to maintain that sort of performance, and then they will be in the team the following week again. So, I think, you know, we can't really take into consideration how Dundee are playing. I think we've got to go there in the belief that we're better than them. They've obviously missed they're two big players from last season. They've missed Hemmings, they've missed Stewart, so they're obviously missing two key players for them, and they obviously haven't replaced them well enough. So hopefully we go there, get an early goal, get the first goal, and go from there. But you know, hopefully we've got enough, especially in the front positions, to go there and do ourselves justice.
Guys, I think that's about all we've got for this week. We'll be back next Monday with Craig Hughes from the Well Society, another episode that we're looking forward to. Guys, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Scrub the cuts from yesterday's hot scuffle.